If you've been listening to Untold so far, you know that things have just gotten personal. Some new information about my granddad came into light, and what was supposed to be a few months wrapping up a project turned into a strange family mystery, and somehow I was wrapped up in it. The facts were the following. The Sweets au pair more or less told me that one of the twins, Abel, was not in fact a real Sweet. And according to the notarized letter that Oliver Sweets showed me, Abel was the secret illegitimate son of Sophia Wiedekind and the famous historian, my grandfather, Angelus Safi. So it seems that I was wrong all along. We did have connections in Crimson Hill, Virginia. And armed with this new information, I went through the disjointed notes that Granddad left behind. And this time, it started to make sense. This wasn't reference material. These were clues, stories and recordings that Granddad collected to figure out what happened to Abel Sweets. The untitled Founders Family Project was just a cover. And for some reason, the Wiedekinds and Carmichaels don't care about us exposing their supernatural secrets on this show. But they don't want Granddad or me getting in the way of their plans. And I figured out why. I figured out what happened to Abel Sweets, but you'll just have to wait to find out. My name is Mara Safi, and you're listening to Untold, the story of Crimson Hill.
Mr. Carmichael's PA? I'm calling to tell you something, but before I get to it, I have to make one thing clear. I am nobody's secretary, okay? You can't have people calling me to take messages for you. But I'm gonna help you out just this once. A Peter Shelley called here and said he was trying to get into contact with you. He wouldn't tell me much, but he said that it had something to do with Ellie Torres. He said it was urgent, so I thought I'd tell you about it. But I'm not anyone's secretary. Anyway, the number he left was
Ellie Torres. That was her name. I haven't been able to track down Ellie since my first day in town, and not for lack of trying. I was focused on the big picture. I thought I'd follow Liza's advice and look into the other six missing girls. I tried badgering the Crimson Hill PD for information related to the case, updates that were available to the press. At first, they played dumb, said there wasn't even an active investigation for, and I quote, a few runaway girls. When I pried, they warned me about the potential dangers of an outsider asking too many questions in a close-knit town. That was as good as a threat, familiar to the one that Ellie was trying to tell me about in her voice message. Basically, I had no leads. Until now. I called back this Peter Shelley, hoping he'd shed some light on literally anything about Ellie's whereabouts. He picked up after two rings and I introduced myself. He told me that he was Ellie's boyfriend, and that Ellie had gone missing, but no one was taking him seriously. He said that he heard about my show on Sweet Talk with Oliver Sweets, and when he realized that I was looking for Ellie, he tried to contact me through her old employer, the Carmichael brothers. At this point, I asked him if I could record the rest of the phone conversation. Luckily, he agreed.
Okay, just talk to me normally like you would if I wasn't recording.
Right. So, like I said, Ellie's been gone for a few weeks. At first, I didn't think it was a big deal. We had an argument. It was in a public place, and Ellie hates that sort of stuff. I thought she took off to cool down.
But then she never came back?
No.
Why didn't you report her missing?
Look, we fight a lot, okay? People see it happening sometimes. If I marched to the police station and told them Ellie ran off after one of our fights, they'd either laugh at me or cuff me.
You didn't report her missing because you didn't want to be looked at as a suspect?
At first, yeah, but then her parents started calling me, asking where she was. They live in Little Grove, a suburb a couple hours east of here. I got worried because I figured she'd be in contact with them at least.
Did you ask her friends, anyone that she works with, maybe?
No one knew where she was. But they weren't too worried about it. Ellie can fend for herself, so I thought she'd fucked off. Sorry, can I curse on your show?
It's fine. You were saying?
Yeah, her friends thought she was running away from me.
And you're sure that she wasn't?
Yeah, and I have an idea about who took her, too.
You do?
Ironically, that's what we were fighting about. She was always taking rides from that Grayson guy from that freak show family up on Founders Lane. He hung around the Carmichael's offices a lot, drove some douchey two-door.
What does that have to... Oh, you think Grayson Wedekind took her?
Yeah, he was always inviting her up to their mansion. Maybe he got tired of hearing her say no. But the cops don't want to hear anything about that. His family keeps their pockets fat with cash.
That's... Thank you for sharing that information with me, but I don't know how much that I can do on my end.
He's taken the others, too.
What?
The girls you talk about on your show, you should know their names. Georgia Forrester, Alina Ray, Emily Walker, Melissa Koenig, Mary Croft, and Charlotte Jeffrey.
You think he took all of them?
Yeah, for their sick ritual, right? But no one's ever gonna do shit. Everyone in this town, we just keep our heads down and let things happen because we're afraid of the alternative. Well, this is my alternative, please. You have to help me find Ellie.
I'll do my best. But I'll need your help, though.
Yeah, anything.
This week's episode is going to be a little bit longer than usual, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back with more on Untold with Mara Safi after this short break. I don't know how credible Peter Shelley's identification of Grayson Wedekind was in Ellie's disappearance, but I didn't take it lightly that it was yet another indictment of the family. I do believe that something happened to her, something bad. I guess I had known it all along, and it was important for Peter to have confirmed it. But the confirmation only meant that I desperately needed an audience with the only person in this town that I counted as an ally.
Hello?
It's me. We need to talk.
Not like this. I'll meet you. When and where?
We met at the courtyard behind the Crimson Hill Public Library at dusk. The dusk part was not my idea. Ethan insisted that the less people around, the better. I found this notion to be funny, because I was under the impression that half the town was listening to my show and the other half knew about it. Maybe a little presumptuous of me. Still, I obliged his request. When I walked into the courtyard, the scent of cherry blossoms filled my nostrils. The distant pink hue of the sunset touched the tops of the bushes that surrounded a scattering of benches. Sitting in one of the benches was Ethan San Montaigne. After exchanging some greetings, I didn't waste time hitting record.
How is recruitment going?
You mean Julian? It's going. He needs time.
Ethan, I know about the solar eclipse ritual and the girls who've been going missing in town.
I know. I've been keeping up with the show. How are you, by the way, in light of recent discoveries?
You mean my newfound relatives in Crimson Hill? Fine. Just trying to get to the bottom of things.
You're related to Oliver Sweets, it seems. That's an interesting relation to have.
Well, he's just as much of a fan of yours. Luckily, I trust you more than he does.
Well, that's good. Look, don't worry about the solar eclipse ritual. We have it taken care of.
Well, I am worried. What if you don't form your trifectum and claim the grimoire in time? Who's gonna pay for that?
Jane still wouldn't have more claim to the grimoire than us, even without Julian. Liza's descended from both the Ezekiel line and the Jackson line, thanks to the nasty Wedekind tradition of keeping magic within the family.
Ew. Wait, but if you're still short a third, then you'll still have to perform the solar eclipse incantation.
Yes, but...
And kill innocent girls. Ethan, I can't believe that you'd...
No, Mara, listen, it's okay. No one is dying. We have a plan.
What?
Ethan reached into his pocket and pulled out a folded piece of paper. He unfolded it and showed it to me. There were words scrawled on it in delicate cursive writing. Then he began to read from it.
Hark! As the earth darkens under the shade of the moon, a window arises for the true of blood. Prepare the ritual and then recite.
This feels weird. Should you be reading it out loud?
It's harmless. I'm just reading a translation. The real spell is in German.
The blood of 6 maidens spilt on the spine of this tome, the 7th and most holy maiden
Wait, maiden? Like virgin?
No.
Sexual politics has no bearing in these ancient texts. The virgin blood stuff wasn't even introduced until the Puritan pedagogy became a thing in the 1600s.
Okay, we don't have time for this etymology lesson. What does the rest say?
The seventh and most holy maiden fallen from the highest skies towards the ground. The keepers of the tome must recite. We pledge our magic and our blood to thee. We die protecting thee. We carry thee until our graves and pass along to those deserving. We pledge, we pledge, we pledge.
I'm missing the part where you don't have to murder people for this.
No, don't you see? Nor does it say anyone has to die. Seven girls have to spill their blood on a tome. That could be a pinprick. We have friends willing to do that for us. We would never let them come to harm.
Okay, and the girl who, what was it, fallen from the highest skies toward the ground, how do you get around that one?
Mara, one thing about magic is that the power lies in the wording. The spell says she has to fall from the highest skies and toward the ground. It never says she has to land.
You're gonna have a girl fall from the tallest tower at Wiedekind Manor, but not let her land on the ground. How are you gonna pull that off?
Remember the day we met at the post office?
Yeah, how could I forget?
Before you reached Ellie Torres's name in the
So that was you!
Since around 13, I've been able to perform feats of telekinesis in short bursts. It saps a great deal of energy for me, and I could never practice and perfect it enough to be a telekinetic. It seems like it's some sort of mutation or something.
So you're gonna let a girl leap off a tower and hope that a short burst of telekinesis will kick in just in time to save her? Ethan, that's a person's life.
Mara, do you trust me?
It's the only way.
Yeah.
Ethan, what are you gonna do with the grimoire when you lay claim to it?
We'll probably use it to perform garden variety spells to help folks around town and keep the order. The trifectum has a lot of sway with family in terms of founders' politics.
What is it that you're not telling me?
I'm not intentionally keeping anything from you.
And then I realized that for the first time, I'd stumbled on information that was too secretive to air on my show. So I turned off my recorder for a moment and asked Ethan to confide in me. And to my surprise, he was more than happy to share. While I can't tell you what he told me, I can say that because of it, I, without a doubt, trusted Ethan San Montain.
There is one more thing you should know if you're looking into the disappearance of Abel Sweets.
What is it?
So, Jane Wiedekind and my Uncle Will kind of have a complicated relationship. Whether or not it's romantic in nature, I'll leave up to the rumors. But they are very close. She comes to visit him in the house often. Around the time that Abel Sweets disappeared, I overheard a conversation between her and my uncle.
What did you hear?
Jane told Uncle Will that she was dying. How the birthed incantation was burning her out. Uncle Will asked how he could help her, but she said she needed the grimoire.
It makes sense that she'd be desperate to get her hands on it. Maybe it could help her. What else did she say?
It didn't make sense at the time, but now, she said that in light of her mother's confession, there was hope yet in her survival.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but her mother's confession, that must be about Abel, right?
Maybe. Thanks for the tip, anyway.
Yeah, of course, Mara. I want to help.
I know. And also, can I ask you something? I need to clear this up for the listeners as well.
Sure. What is it?
I've been calling you Ethan Carmichael, but I took a peek at some of the town documents in Grandad's files and noticed that your legal surname is San Montain. How is that a thing?
Right. Dad and Uncle Wilcox both came up with the idea to change it when I was little. Some nonsense about carrying on the namesake.
I stopped recording after this because I needed to ask his advice on how to help the missing girls, and I had learned my lesson announcing my plans on this show. Ethan told me that without Liza, penetrating the magical fortitude of Wiedekind Manor would be next to impossible. Her arrival in a couple days would set the whole plan in motion. Then it was a ticking clock until the solar eclipse to save the girls and claim the grimoire. No big deal. Until then, I'd have to wait. Speaking of waiting, I've kept you in the dark long enough. Earlier in this episode, I told you I knew what happened to Abel Sweets. After Ethan told me about what he'd overheard Jane say to Wilcox Carmichael, something was nagging at me.
I did some digging in Granddad's files, ones that I'd seen before, but they hadn't really made much sense until now. Among them, I found a photocopy of what looks like a page from a book. From the copy, I could tell that the original text was old and probably yellowing. It was in a different language, and one quick Google search confirmed that it was in German. However, there were notes scribbled around the margins of the photocopy, notes that were in Granddad's handwriting. From what I could make out, he was trying to translate and interpret the text. Granddad seemed to think that it was some spell or ritual of some kind that would help the caster cheat death. The part that was circled multiple times was at the very end of the text. Granddad's notes translated the text literally into a mother's blood sacrifice. According to Ethan, Jane Wiedekamp was dying, and from what Granddad had uncovered, it seems like she was trying to find a way to cheat it. And then it dawned on me. Jane's mother, Sophie, was very much dead. There was no way she could force her to make a blood sacrifice. But what Ethan had said about the power of wording kept rattling around in my head. What if Jane didn't really need the blood of Sophie herself? What if she could use the surviving son, who Sophie had sacrificed everything to protect? Thank you for listening to Untold with Mara Safi. Story and editing by Maisha Razik. Today's guest voices in order were Laura Honick, Drew Kennedy, and Colton Coates. Music by Ross Bugden. If you're enjoying Untold, be sure to like, subscribe, and leave a rating or review. And don't forget to follow us at The Untold Pod on Twitter and Instagram.